Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th. So get your tickets now at kosai.org.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Don't Make Me Come Back There, a funny podcast about family. I am Dustin Nickerson, host and stand-up comedian of this podcast. I'm a host of this podcast, not a stand-up comedian of this podcast. I'm here with stand-up comedian and producer of this contest.
You're doing
contest.
Good. You're doing really good. You're doing great so hosting close. So far. You're doing really good.
Listen, I'm not. I don't bring you here for this. welcome. Thank you so much for tuning into our podcast. We have a funny, really interesting episode today with comedian Jason Collins. Is a hot debate. Jason, I know you may or may not listen to this. I love you. I've heard your name pronounced so many different ways that I'm just not going to hit it confidently. I'm sorry. I'm weak, but I care for you. You can give Jason a follow on Twitter at Jason, J-A-S-O-N, Collins, C-O-L-L-I-N-G-S. It's one of those things when you hear it one way or the other, it's just wrong forever. And he's the same on Instagram, J-A-S-O-N-C-O-L-L-I-N-G-S. He's a comedian. He's been on Gotham Live, BET, Comic View, The Tonight Show. In this episode we do with him, we talk to a lot about his comedy career and coming up, but also about his relationship with his dad growing up. Particularly, we talked one thing that I really wanted to hear from his perspective as a dad and also, you know, growing up was about humor in the home. As a comedian, was his dad funny? Is he funny? The role that I played. So we kind of have a nice conversation of interweaving that topic with him also talking about his comedy career, which I will tell you this. If you are a comedian listening to this, when he talks about who tells him to start doing comedy and talks about
his
who
road.
He met the first few times.
His road's not
It's
typical.
Not real. Jason does not live. Jason Collins is comedy life is a fantasy. I'm not confident that he's a real person.
It's a unicorn. He has a unicorn career.
But he was a great episode, and we hope you guys enjoy this. He lives in Long Beach. He
LBC.
Does a lot of comedy in Los Angeles. You're from Long Beach?
I'm from Cerritos, but I went to
Cerritos. That is that Mexican soda. You can get it in red.
That's Jarritos.
Jarritos. It's pretty close.
No.
Jarritos, I knew it was called Jarritos. I was trying to be funny.
You didn't know.
Undrinkable.
It's too sweet.
I look at it and I get dehydrated. I look at it.
It's neon color. Every single flavor
first,
is
like,
neon.
I bet it's like Gatorade. No.
Nope.
No.
Nope.
No electrolytes. All the sugar. Hey, we took out the electrolytes and just replaced it with more sugar.
With more sugar.
More sugar. Just so it does. So he's from Long Beach, but he's based in Los Angeles. If you follow Jason, that guy's going up at in L.A. all the time. You and I, Stephen, were both in Los Angeles in the last couple of weeks.
Yeah.
Not doing comedy, but attending concerts.
Yes.
This tells you a little bit. All you need to know about our differences
is
the different concerts that you went and saw. I saw Florence and the Machine.
Yeah. And I saw Jay-Z and Beyonce.
And we saw it with our respective spouses.
Yeah.
Now, I would be willing to, I would go to a Jay-Z and Beyonce.
Beyonce?
I am the worst podcast host.
No, you're doing well.
I miss every word in
this. You're doing fine.
Yesterday, you're doing just fine. I had to write, so when we were doing the tour, I ran out of stickers. We were promoting the podcast here. We have Don't Make Me Come Back. They're stickers. And I give people, if they subscribe, a sticker. I ran out. And I told some people, hey, if you subscribe, and message me your address. I'll mail it to you. So I had like five or six of these people. And yesterday I did it. And I am writing five thank you cards is the hardest thing I've ever done in my life. That my hand was sore. I misspelled every word. I'm saying I'm sloppier, even sloppier. You don't realize like how little you write anymore.
Yeah.
And when you do, you're like, I don't miss this.
This is
I felt, you remember, you know that feeling when you used to have to handwrite a test?
Yeah.
Like an essay in college. Yeah. And by the end, you're like, sheesh, I'm cramping.
Yeah.
One thank you card. And I was like, just, it was like up. I got full T-Rex arm.
I need some electrolytes. Give me a Jarritos.
Give me a Jarritos. Just pour a Jarritos on my
form. This didn't help.
Anyways, so you, how was your show? Be real.
Okay, real talk, like 100%. I'm not really, I don't.
You're like a country fan.
Well, my
You're
wife.
You're like a Luke Bryant guy.
My wife used to work for a country concert. I actually am.
Country station.
Country station, yeah. So she used to work for 103.7 here in San Diego. And I've gone to a lot of country concerts. Cool thing about country concerts, there's no pressure to like have fun. There's no pressure to like. There's no pressure to like be like, you don't have to like act like it. But when
listen, so, this isn't a good time.
Yeah.
We're not, none of us are having a good time here.
No, there's no pressure to like, there's people dancing. There's people like doing the two step. There's people doing like a lot of stuff, but you don't have to do that. You can just like
sit.
This
is different than Beyonce, Jay-Z though.
Because you have to the entire time. My wife is the biggest Beyonce fan. If Beyonce did commercials for ISIS on a Sunday, my wife would be in Syria by a Tuesday. Like, that's not even a joke. Like,
yeah, she's a big fan.
She's a huge fan.
So were you feeling it was a good concert?
It's a great concert. It's Where a great was concert. It was in the Hollywood, no, the Rose Bowl.
The Rose Bowl.
Yeah.
Ours was at the Hollywood Bowl.
Oh, okay. Bragger.
Yeah. I got tickets from my agent.
I got tickets from the internet. But no, it was a good concert and it was fun. And like, but
via my debit card.
She kept looking at me and she kept being like, are you having a good time? I'm like, yeah, I'm having a good time. But it's because I wasn't having a good enough time for her. And also the other side
of
me.
That's what you do with your kids on like a vacation when you're like, this is not going well. You're like, are you guys having fun? Yeah.
And the other side of me is another of our good friends, Mal Hall, another comedian, very funny guy. Mm-hmm. Check him out, malhallcomedy.com, whatever. I don't know. But he's
great
a huge,
plug.
He's a huge, yeah. I'm really good at this too. He's a huge Jay-Z fan. So it's like between both of them, I just kept feeling like I wasn't.
You weren't feeling it as much as they were.
I was having a good time, but I wasn't doing enough that they would like feel like I was having a good time. So I kept having to be like, I'm sorry. Like having to be like, I'm sorry. Like I'm like
right.
Back and forth. So that's,
I see, yeah.
That's what I'm like. That's what's
but
that's
like,
stressing
the
me out about
concerts. But like the production and the, you know, where you're like, this is good. This is well done.
I had a great time.
Okay.
It was honestly one of the best concerts I've ever had. But honestly.
Man, you got to lead with that.
It was one of the best concerts I've ever seen, but at the same time,
it wasn't okay.
Because I can't be hype enough.
You're like, this is great. It's so funny that a married couple's doing it. Like, do they do that and then just go have like normal married fights?
No,
the
they don't
time?
Have any normal life. I feel like,
yeah, but they're still married.
But here's the
it's
deal:
it's still a marriage.
I don't know what's weirder: how I imagine Jay-Z and Beyonce's life. Or what their actual life is, because
no,
I think their life
no,
is really crazy.
I bet she'll still get mad at him, like if he doesn't. Rinse out the sink after he brushes his teeth on the tour bus.
She made an entire album about being mad at him. So yeah. I think it's they're out there. Like they're,
yeah,
they live
that's
out
true.
Loud.
It's a different life.
Yeah.
Florence and the Machine was a very different concert.
You could just chill. You could just like
it
relax.
It was the most like NPR,
you could just bob your head. You could just bob your
crowd.
Head.
No. They're a rock band. They're like they get some rock pop songs.
Name a song.
I'm a fan. I can
well,
name
I'm
a lot.
No, I'm saying so I know.
Shake It Off. That was the big one, you know.
That's Taylor Swift.
No, stop it. That's the with the devil on your back. They came out the same time. That was The Dog Days Are Over. You know that one?
Keep going.
Their new one is that song Hunger. Listen, if you don't know the two biggest hits, but like they're, you know, they're a good band, but they're a big band and they weren't like super, you know, like they're kind of stationary. It was a good concert, and it's one of those things, though, that, like, you go, and you're like, okay, these are what the songs are. I know these songs. They kind of played it like the album. And but I will say that there's nothing less cool in rock and roll than the harp player. That guy, he came out with this full harp, and it just, you could play. She was great. She was really entertaining.
What was his hairstyle like, the harp player?
I couldn't. He was hidden behind the harp. I couldn't even see him. And they just kind of stood there and didn't do a whole lot. And I was like, you know, it's just, you know, sometimes you go in the band and you're like, this is a great band. I will listen to everything you say, but I don't need to see you live. And a little bit was it was because, like, when the singer starts talking,
sure,
you have to really agree with them on to put up with it. And she was telling us to hold hands,
yeah,
and collective consciousness stuff.
Yeah.
And I'm like, listen, I know I'm in L.A. and I'm the Hollywood Bowl.
Yeah.
She has a pretty tough talking voice that ain't on her.
Yeah.
That's fine. You get the voice that
it's a smoky voice.
It's really high pitched. Oh. Los Angeles, like South London.
Oh.
Everybody hold hands and we'll share a collective consciousness as we try and
meanwhile at the Beyonce
conquer toxic masculinity. And
meanwhile,
like,
at the Beyonce and Jay-Z concert, there's an entire marching band in this Hollywood Squares like formation behind him playing. It was the most hype.
Your thing. Both of them are doing well. They're doing better than us in this podcast. Force of the Machine sold out Hollywood Bowl twice, two nights in a row.
I mean, we probably could.
Yeah, that's true. Well, if you guys would get around to rating and subscribing us, how was that the best segue in history? if you guys have not already, please follow us on Twitter at Don't Make Me Pod and give us a like on Facebook.
Yeah.
We've starting to get a couple fan emails here and there. We keep sending this and send topics.
I'm going to keep saying until it happens. I want the people who listen in Australia, because I thought it was like a one-off thing, but it gets an actual thing.
No, we got a bunch of listeners in Australia.
People in Australia are listening. Please email, because I want to know, what are you doing? Like, what's your life? What are you? How did you find this podcast?
We have new listeners in Algeria, and we still got the two in Cambodia.
Cambodia? What are you?
Switzerland?
Yeah.
Shout out.
That makes sense.
Guatemala?
Guatemala? It's Guatemala.
I think a lot of these might be missionaries. I'm not going to lie. Please let us know. Shoot us an email. Don't make me come back there at gmail.com
I'm
and
interested.
Let us know.
Yeah.
And if nothing else, if there's one thing, one big takeaway, please rate and subscribe and do all those things and tell a friend. Maybe take out a billboard.
Yeah.
Whatever you need to do. Do some grand gesture to show your love for the podcast. We'll be happy to send you a sticker and a thank you note.
Yeah, for
sure. Guys, enjoy this episode with Jason. Thank you so much. We love and appreciate every single one of you for listening to this podcast. It means the world to us. Thanks so much and enjoy.
Yeah, see ya.
Jason.
Hi.
How are you, buddy?
Doing good.
Thanks for coming down.
It's easy. Nice little 3-hour drive.
3 hours, 70 miles.
Yeah,
yeah. Easy. Welcome back to Lestats.
I love it here.
Yeah, this is how many times you've played it? Twice since I've been running it. This, and had you played it before that, or did I recruit you in?
I think you recruited me in.
Mm.
I think.
Yeah, take that, Christian Spicer, Rajan Darney, Mal
was
Hall.
Christian actually had me down here.
Freaking Christian. Freaking Christian. I mean, he's royalty here. He brings in the big dogs. But yeah, I appreciate you coming down. How are things?
Things are
good?
Great. Yeah. Things are good. I'm running around the country a lot, telling these stories about my family and all
none
that.
None of them true.
None of them are true. None of them. Totally made up. I'm actually a single 27-year-old with really bad skin.
I have aged poorly. It's been a bad 27.
It's been rough.
It was the 6 years in Haiti. Those were the bad years. We were just talking about that before we started. It is amazing to me. Well, let me ask you, how much of your act, percent pie chart wise, is about family, wife and kid stuff?
My act's more about, it sounds so narcissistic, it's mostly about me. But it's my outlook on being a dad.
Yeah.
And having this grumpy attitude. The thing I'm doing lately, this hour that I'm doing lately, is about this whole anger.
Right.
Angry at the world, angry, like, getting to the age where I'm like not sure how I feel about being around other people and that kind of thing. But I'm introducing them to that guy through, you know, the stories about my
right.
kids, my family. And
so a good chunk of the act alludes to the fact that, you know, you're a family man, you got a
yeah.
wife, you got kids.
Yeah.
And still, like me, you get the question, do you really have kids?
Oh, all the time.
What is that?
When you were, I mean, we are going into detail about this stuff, and then you have somebody go, so is that real? Do you really have?
You've named the kids. You've said their ages.
Yeah, I always get that one. That's the one I always get. Are they really that age? Do you really have kids that age?
Why would we change that?
Well,
I mean, I guess every once in a while, I'll missay the name age of the kid, or I'll tell a story from when they're younger. But
yeah.
I guess it's just a throwback to the that there's such a thing. And I guess there are, right? Comedians who just, Larry the Cable Guys, that this is a whole front.
Right.
This is a total farce.
We are talking about the real thing. Like my buddy said it perfectly. You know Steve Trevino, he said it. He says, people come up to me after the show and they go, I really love your jokes. And he said, jokes? You're watching a documentary. This is real stuff. And that's how it is. You know.
Every
people
time.
Ask me the question, though, because my kids are grown up.
Yeah.
And they think that I'm not, you know, which is kind of a cool compliment, that I'm not old enough.
Sure.
My son's going to be 29 in September.
Whoa.
Yeah, he's going to be 29 and the youngest is 23.
Holy smokes.
So they're adults.
Yeah, those aren't young kids. You've raised them.
Those are people.
Mine aren't humans. Yet.
Those are roommates that don't pay rent.
Are they both still in the... Wait a minute, how many kids do you have?
Two boys.
Two boys and 29
men.
And
sorry,
23.
Two
grown men that you shave a razor with.
Yes, that
share
we
a razor
share
with.
A razor with. And they, my youngest literally... I always have to buy a new electric shaver.
Yeah.
Because he's always using it
and
breaking it.
Yeah.
And I tell him, this one's mine. Don't use this one. Sure enough. Here's how I know it's him, because it's covered in little black hairs and mine are gray. I got happy for a minute. Wait a minute.
Yeah,
oh, no.
Instead of being caught red-handed, you've been caught black-bearded.
Black-bearded. Caught that punk black-bearded. They moved out. My oldest had moved out about 3 years ago, but he's a millennial, so he's back.
He's 29.
He's 29. He moved back home because when he moved out of state.
Okay.
And the cost of living was so easy.
Right.
And then he did some business out there, came, wanted to come back.
That
was homesick.
He did a little business.
He did some business, my son. Did go, but then moved back to L.A., and it was just, he's saving his money, which is good. He's not just laying around the house all day. I rarely see him. He's at work all day.
Yeah, but if you make $30,000 in Wichita, you are the prince of Wichita.
It was Arkansas where he was, and he was living two-story townhouse condo in a gated community on a golf course. Coming back to L.A., bedroom. Or what I like to call my office for 3 years.
Yes, with the 3 years he was gone, he moved back. And are you charging him rent?
I mean, he's trying to say, right now I'm not.
Yeah.
But it's
you're
just,
a good dad. I charge my dad rent. He lives with us and I charge him rent.
And that's probably what they would do. They would definitely charge me rent.
Yeah. That's pretty. I can't tell if it's cold blooded, but you're right. I feel the same way. I was like, no, you would have done this to me. I'm doing this to you.
Right. And the thing is, with my youngest son, he chose a career in arts. So he's making zero money.
Yeah.
But I'm really supportive of what he's doing.
As I say, that's your fault.
Yeah. He's a photographer.
Yeah.
And he went to school for it and everything.
Yeah.
And just.
The photographer may be one of the things that is maybe a worse choice than comedy.
I mean, I'm paying for all the film. All the film.
Because anymore, like it used to be like, you know, photography took like real skills.
Yeah.
You had to be a trained photographer. And it's true. Like there are still, but the difference between a professional photographer and then just someone who buys like a nice camera and can look straight. It's small, man. It's hard. I couldn't tell the difference between these world-class photos and just somebody.
The thing that I'm really that I'm excited about with his photography is he's doing a lot of film. He's really interesting, artsy stuff. Like he's doing some projects with Polaroids and
that's
film,
cool.
And he's got his first gallery show coming up in May.
How much did you pay to rent that space?
Well, I paid for all the prints. That happened. I had to pay for all the prints. But I'm supporting his dream. But everything on the wall has a price tag on it. I mean, he's got one that he's going to be asking like $500 for.
Yeah.
So that's going right to
that's a feature
his
weekend.
Mother. I'm not going to see that money ever. I just realized that sitting here right now, I thought, wait a minute, I'm never going to see that money.
Yeah, it doesn't. Yeah, I come home and hand the check straight to my wife. I'm like, all right. This will go to Ralph's or hopefully rent or
hopefully.
Yeah. Every once in a while I'll check it, but
rent. I miss those days.
Yeah. So you said you live in Lakewood.
Live in Lakewood,
and
California.
You guys own a place up there.
Bought a house in Lakewood about 7 years ago.
Okay. Now where did you grow up?
I grew up in Long Beach.
Okay. So that's home.
It's home.
The LBC.
The LBC. Grew up in Long Beach. Born in Santa Monica.
Okay.
Lived in North Hollywood.
On the roller coaster.
Born in Santa Monica on the strip there. On the roller coaster. Then I lived in North Hollywood.
Flew out into the ocean from the...
lived in North Hollywood. My dad was in the entertainment industry.
Oh,
my dad was a musician, and he had a hit single and was a touring musician.
Who's your dad? Do I know this single?
My dad's name was Michael Collings. The song was called Friends, and the band was called Feather, and I think it charted it, like it went into the top five at one point.
Oh wow!
Yeah, and it was on, and they toured all over with it.
Right.
With this hit. It was a typical one hit wonder story.
Mm-hmm.
You know, infighting with the band, everybody wanted, and it just kind of eventually fell apart. But man, he toured with some big people. But
yeah.
So he was trying to be a rock star all the way till I was about 8 years old, and then
right.
He went into business after that and was a normal father from then on out, but as normal as you can be. But yeah, he wasn't around a lot.
Except he used to be a one-hit wonder touring artist. Yeah. He just, that's there. What business did he go into?
Electronic components, like inductors and coils and stuff that go on like motherboards.
So very specific.
Yeah, there was a company that he built with it. It was actually him and the guitar player in one of his bands.
Yeah.
See, the thing is, my dad... It wasn't working out with music, so he mm-hmm. quit it cold turkey. My mom gave him an ultimatum. She said, you can be a rock star, you can be a father, but you can't be both.
You got to pick music or me. Yeah.
And he picked, thank goodness he picked me and my brother.
Yeah.
And
this is like the movie Coco.
Literally, the next day, I'm now a full-time dad, signed us up for football. He was coaching. It was all of a sudden.
How old were you?
Eight.
Eight. So you remember it?
Oh, yeah. I remember. Yeah, I don't remember.
I get to play sports.
I don't remember a lot of him not being there.
Right.
My memory of him was he was always there.
Mm-hmm.
And one day we didn't have a lot of money. You know, my dad was, the football league that we were in was like the poorest league. And it was like all like inner city kids. We didn't even know what money looked like. And we're at football practice one day and this Porsche pulls up. And I'm like, all the kids on the field, whoa, that's a Porsche, you know. Yeah. Guy gets out of the Porsche and I recognize him. I go, oh, it's the guy who used to play music with dad. And they had a little talk, the guy showed up, and he said, I'm starting this electronics company, and I want you to help me build it. And then him and my dad ended up building this company up to, like, became like a Fortune 500 company. And then he did that for
So this was ever. The ex-guitar player who was in the band.
Yeah, him and my pop started a business.
Who was doing okay money-wise because he got the Porsche.
Well, yeah, he got into business.
Oh, when he started, when he recruited your dad into that business.
Yep.
Oh, that's awesome.
That my dad did that for the next 20 years, and then from there he retired into martial arts instruction, and then before he passed,
Okay, and now are you connected to that still?
No, okay. I taught martial arts for close to 30 years.
What?
I
didn't know that.
You didn't know? Yeah.
It's so weird in comedy, like you and I have probably done 30 shows together, something like that.
Yeah,
I'm just like, oh, Jason's a comedian. He's always been a comedian. I don't know, you taught martial arts for 30
years.
I've
never had a real job, but I've done... Like when I was 19, I had a record deal. I was producing hip hop music at 19 and signed to a record deal, and then had a kid young and needed to put money on the table. I was a black belt at the time. My brother was a black belt. My dad had gotten a black belt.
Crazy.
So he said, let's open a martial arts school. So we, the three of us, my brother and my father, in 92, I was 21 years old, opened my own school. By the time I retired from that at 40 something, my brother and I had something like seven schools under us.
Wow.
That we were teaching.
Your twin brother, right?
Yep, identical twin.
Yeah, which is eerie, the identical
when
twin
you
made
brother. We always forget to tell people, to warn people.
Yeah.
There was a funny thing that happened the other night. We're at the Laugh Factory in Long Beach, and mm-hmm. my brother went to the show, and he's sitting in the back of the room, and I hadn't gotten there yet. They call me. They're like, Thomas Tran was hosting. He said, he's gonna go until you get here, so hurry, because I was given the wrong time. But I get there, and then Thomas, it was hilarious. He kept looking at me. My brother in the back of the room, like, why aren't you walking over to the side of the stage? So he was like, almost like, why isn't he? But then he realized it wasn't me.
Right.
It was my brother standing in the back of the room.
Yeah, no, you freaked me out when you did, because we were at the Comedy Store when I met your brother randomly and in Hollywood, and we were just there, and we were just talking, and in the middle of nowhere, you go, hey, you want to see something freaky? That was all you said, and then I looked, and it was like, and then I looked back to my right to confirm you were still next to me.
Is Jason magic?
You hadn't pulled just some switcheroo on me, like, Jason's what happened?
Jason's an X-Man.
Yeah. There was a moment that I was convinced that was you, and who was next to me was somebody dressed up as you.
That's
like,
so funny.
All along, it was somebody else.
People always say, you have to tell us, because they'll go up to my brother and like, dude, it was good seeing you the other night.
Great set tonight, bro.
He goes, that wasn't me. That was my brother. And then a lot of people are like,
Why are you being like this?
And why are you sticking to the bits? You are really committing to this bit, Jason.
Yeah.
That you're not Jason.
It's like the prestige. You guys could have gone that route.
Yeah,
you could have gone the route of the magician and had a shared wife and child. There's so many. I mean, you could still. Well, that's great, man. I had no idea. Well, one of the things I wanted to focus on this episode, because I think as comedians, we have a shared language, shared experiences, but also comedians who are dads, I think we have shared questions that we get a lot, and people are so interested in, like, okay, well, I saw that on stage. What does that look like at home? So before we kind of get into your home, like, so growing up, was your dad funny? He was in the entertainment industry. He was fun. Yeah.
Hilarious. And comedy was the big thing in our house. It, like, we would look forward to the next Carlin HBO special.
Yeah.
Like, it was the Tyson fight. Like, that was like the thing. We're getting the specials on tonight.
That's amazing.
All. And, I mean,
you're young, which is awesome that your dad's
was one of the funniest people I knew. And he really enjoyed comedy, and when I got into it, he was pretty excited. He didn't get to see much of it, but he got to see enough to where he told me, this is what you're supposed to be doing. Don't stop doing
this. That's beautiful.
Yeah, so it was pretty cool.
Yeah, to get that encouragement. How old were you when you started comedy?
I was 35.
Yeah.
I was 35 years old when I started because, like I said, my dad, when I was young, was gone a lot on tour. And, and when I grew up, because he was so amazing as a father that I don't have any memory of him not being there.
Mm.
But he would tell us, you know, I wasn't there for your first steps. I wasn't there for your first words. And
did he feel guilty about it?
Yeah,
was
he made up for it. I mean, he totally made up for it. He was an amazing dad. I mean, all my friends wanted him to be their dad. Like, he was like that dad, you
know?
Yeah,
that's so cool.
But I didn't want to miss that stuff. And I had kids young. And so I kind of put the comedy dream aside and quit music.
So you were thinking about it before.
I always wanted to do it, but I was also into music. But I put everything down and I opened my own martial arts school so that I could just be there for everything. I didn't want to miss a thing. And I coached the Little League and I was there for everything. And then when the kids were 11 and 16, I decided to get into it.
I don't need to see these years.
Yeah. I have a great friend named Joe Coy. Of course you know who Joe is. I've been doing stand-up for now for 12 years. I've known Joe for close to 20.
Oh, wow. How do you guys know each
other? We met through a friend of mine that I went to high school with. One of my best friends that I grew up with did business with Joe. Because Joe started doing stand-up in like 89.
Right.
And
wow, I didn't know he'd been at that long.
Oh, yeah. He's been hustling. But there was this clothing line that Joe liked to wear on stage. What it turned out, my best friend that I grew up with was the marketing guy for that clothing company. And they met in Vegas at this trade show. And Joe went up to him and said, this is what I wear this. And my buddy was like, boom. And next thing you know, my friend sponsored his first DVD taping, everything.
Oh, wow. That's cool.
And would always tell me, I have this friend who's a comedian. You got to meet him. And you got to meet him for years. And then finally we met at a barbecue and we were in line getting food and I'm cracking jokes. He's cracking jokes. We don't know who each other are.
Just riffing.
Cracking each other up. Mm. We end up sitting together at a table. He's like, what's up, man? I'm Jason. He goes, I'm Joe. And he goes, what do you do for a living? Like, what do you do? I go, you wouldn't believe me. And he goes, no, what do you do? I go, I teach martial arts. I'm a martial arts instructor. Joe's a martial arts fan. He's like, whoa, that's awesome. And we're cracking each other up. And I go, what do you do? He goes, I'm a comedian. And I go, oh, you're Joe. Carlos, my buddy's Carlos.
Oh, you put it together. There you go.
He's been wanting us to meet. And then we kind of became buddies. And I just started going out with him everywhere to all his shows. I've known Joe since he was just still.
So before you were doing comedy, you were just going out to his shows.
Yeah.
So you were around the scene.
Yeah. And he was just like a Monday night, Wednesday night comic that was still working at a shoe store, driving a crappy car. And like, I watched him build this career.
It gave you such a good picture of what it looks like.
It was amazing. Yeah, it was awesome. So
did he encourage you to start?
Yeah.
Yeah.
The story's pretty.
Which you don't hear that a lot. I mean, I feel like maybe I should be more encouraging in general, but if I hear someone that wants to start comedy, I'm usually like, nah, don't do it.
Well, yeah.
I should be.
Yeah.
It's really bad. We don't need more of you.
It's not awesome.
Yeah.
But yeah, I told him all the time, I want to do this. I want to do this. I think he could do this. And I was like, if I'm making this guy laugh and he's a professional comedian,
right.
You know?
Absolutely. Yeah.
And so I went around with him for like a year. And then one day he called me and he says, I'm doing a show at the Improv in Irvine. Do you want to go? And I go, he goes, I'll pick you up on the way. Because Long Beach is between where he lived mm-hmm. in Orange County. I said, yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. I said, but I'm at my dad's house. I'm sitting with my dad. Can you pick me up there? He goes, yeah, no problem. And my dad was excited because being an entertainer himself, he always liked meeting other entertainers. And
show,
he loved stand-up.
Guy, yeah, it's great.
So and by this time, my dad wasn't doing very well at all.
Okay.
And Joe comes to my parents' house. And he comes in and he meets my dad. I leave the room for a minute. I got to go get ready or whatever. And dad, this is Joe. And my dad immediately is like, what? Tell me about it. And, you know, my dad was a great conversation. And then we leave and we get in the car and Joe goes, do you really want to do stand up? And we had this conversation all the time. I go, yeah, dude, I always tell you I want to do it. He goes, no. Do you really want to do it? Like in a different, way different tone.
Yeah.
And I go, yeah, I do. And he says, excuse my language, he says, then quit being such a and do it, or your father may not be able to see you do it.
Whoa.
Like that. And I never thought of it that way. And I went, oh. Literally the next day, I went to a comedy club and lied my way into a show. I've never done it. To this day, I've never done an open mic.
What do you mean you lied your way? You just said, can I go?
I went to the Ha Ha Cafe.
Yeah.
I asked for the owner. I didn't know how comedy worked. All I knew from comedy was what I saw Joe doing, was performing at the Laugh Factory every night with Dane Cook and Daniel Tosh and like these big names.
You're like,
guys.
So if I want to do comedy, that's just
what
I do.
That's what I'm supposed to do, right. Mm-hmm. And Joe told me, you should go to the Ha Ha. That's kind of the good spot to start. And what he meant was go do their open mic. That's what he meant. What I did is I went up there with all the confidence of a guy who I used to fight full contact. It was like this confident kind. I go, I need to speak to the owner. And the guy at the door goes, okay. And I guess I said it with such confidence.
I need to speak to the owner.
Yeah. I had no idea how it worked. I didn't know.
Yeah.
So Jack comes out. Jack Sr. Mm-hmm. comes out and says, I go, yeah, hi, Jack. I'm friends with Joe Coy. Joe Coy and John Lovitz. Those are the names I dropped. Joe Coy and John Lovitz told me that to come here that you'd give me some stage time. He says, really? How long have you been doing stand-up? I said, 5 years.
Oh, man.
I've never done
straight through the teeth lie.
Just told him that. That's the number that I pulled out. 5 years. He goes, where? I go, I do a lot of, I don't even remember what I said.
I do a lot of fun.
Never did it in my life. And he goes, and Joe told you, and John Lovitz, I go, oh, yeah, I'm Fraser Smith. Fraser Smith told
just
me to come
down.
Just
one more. Just yep. For good measure. Let's start
the
Fraser.
The reason I use those three names is because the night before, when I went to the Irvine Improv with Joe,
mm-hmm.
That was the lineup.
That was the lineup. Those
were
the last three
It was
three
Fraser,
you would
Fraser
see.
Hosting, Joe featuring, and Lovitz headlining. And we hung out. And I'm like, we're friends now.
If there's any young comedians listening
this
to this
isn't how
podcast,
it works.
Do not do this. Yeah. Do not do this. Go to open mics.
I'm just telling my story. This is my story.
Yeah, this is your. And it worked. You're doing
he it. Said, come back tomorrow. You're on the show.
Wow. So you got a booking. Not that night, but.
I got to go the next night, and I'm talking show. Thursday night, 8 o'clock show.
How much time are you doing?
I did 15 minutes.
Your very first time on stage.
Very first time. Listen, went third
and
did 15 minutes. The sweet spot, 15.
Yeah.
And the guy goes, okay, you're on third. You'll be doing 15 minutes. I'll light you at whatever the number was.
Do you even know what that means?
I had no idea what it meant. And I went like this. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Light me. Great. That's what I had no idea what that meant. I figured I'll figure it out when I'm on stage. And I wasn't scared or nervous because I've come out of a world where people are trying to punch me in the face all the time. And I've raised kids. And like, I'm like, I've done the scariest things ever.
Yeah.
So I go up. I do 15. The guy, I'm doing well, by the way. And the guy opens his phone up and starts waving his phone at me. That's the light.
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
You had no idea.
I'm like, why is this guy waving his phone at me right now? In my head, do I have a phone call? I was like, what am I doing?
You have no category for it at first, yeah.
I go, oh, that's the light. And I wrapped it up, and I finished. Great reaction with the audience. One more time, that guy. He introduces the next comic. The next comic was Chris D'Elia. That night we became, you know, me and Chris were pretty close friends. That's where we met. And he had been doing stand-up for 6 months at that point. And
this is the most ridiculous first time story
I've
ever
insane.
Heard. This is the stupidest.
Mind you, while I'm on stage, I hear this guy laughing like a maniac in the back. You've heard D'Elia's laugh.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, is this guy screwing with me right now? Like, I was kind of like, is he seriously, is that how he laughs or is he just messing with me? on stage. He goes on. The host comes off and comes right up to me, and he goes, "Great set. Come back tomorrow. You're on the show tomorrow." And that was, and I was a stand-up comic ever since then.
The next night, he gets booked on The Tonight Show.
No, I got The Tonight Show 6 years in.
Yeah. There's some reality. That's a little, and that's early.
6 or 7 years
in. Yeah, and even that's pretty early.
Yeah, but yeah, that's how I got into stand-up.
Oh, man.
And I called
Joe. And so your dad did see you do it a bit.
Well, he didn't get to go to the show.
Yeah, but I mean, and there he was around for
right,
those early years.
Second or third time I did stand-up, I had my brother videotape my set.
Okay.
And it just so happened to be another good night, good crowd, and a good set. Mm-hmm. Take the tape home to show my dad. He watches it. Didn't laugh. Watched it like studying it.
Right.
And I'm going,
You're watching it with him?
With him. Oh, no. Didn't laugh. At the end of the set, he stopped and he thought and he looks and he says, "Okay, don't do that joke about the so-and-so." He goes, your mom won't like that joke. And then he goes, "But that doesn't look like someone that's only done it 3 times. He goes, "You look seasoned. You look like, you know," he goes, "son, that's what you're supposed to be doing. This is what you are supposed to
that's
be
amazing.
Doing. And don't ever stop."
I mean, to have that kind of, I mean, you have the comedy industry affirmation. You have Joe helping you, you know, encouraging you. Boom, boom, boom. What a great little nest out of the
month,
beginning.
1 month almost to the day after I started stand-up, he passed away.
Wow.
And I will never forget that. Don't stop doing this. This is what you're supposed to be doing. If you ever saw my Tonight Show set, at the end of my set, I kind of pointed up real quick.
Yeah, I've seen that.
That was, there you go, Dad. And it's amazing because he believed in me so much and wasn't able to tell me, but he told me in ways afterwards. Like, there were things that happened that I'm like, oh, my gosh. One day I'm at my mom's house, and I found a bottle of Dom Perignon. Mm-hmm. And I go, "Mom, what is this?" They weren't alcohol drinkers, and this is expensive bottle. She goes, "Oh, well, your father said, don't open that bottle until Jason gets his first paid gig." Still haven't opened it. I can't find the reason to. Tonight Show wasn't even it. I just was like, I don't know if that's it, you know. And I still haven't. I mean, I'm getting. This is what I do for a living now. Still haven't opened the
bottle.
It's
going to be when your kid sells his first painting or photo.
That would be awesome.
The photo.
That would be
pass
awesome.
It down, yeah.
But that was my intro into stand up. And then of course it got rough. It wasn't always like
that.
Yeah,
there was a reality check.
Pool halls and laundromats and
I don't think I've heard anybody
and...
who's had that crazy of a first story, but I've heard people who have that early good first few shows, but reality will kick in. It's too hard of an industry for it not to.
Yeah.
So you said your dad was funny growing up. Was he witty? Was he sarcastic? Was he
all of it? He was smart and very sarcastic.
Yeah. Towards your mom, towards it's you and
anyone
your brother.
That he just couldn't believe that they were this dumb.
That was the general outlook.
We were at a movie one time. One of my favorite stories, thinking about how my dad's mind worked. We're at a movie, and you might be too young to remember. There was a movie called The Last Starfighter. It was like a big movie in the 80s.
Yeah, I know the movie. I did not see it in theaters.
There was a scene in the movie where the main character lived in a trailer park, and the trailer park was called Starlight, Starbright. And the sign of the trailer park was this neon sign that blinked Starlight. Starlight, it blinked like that. We're in the theater watching the movie. That scene comes on and the sign's blinking and the girl behind us goes, "Starlight, star bright." And my dad goes, "Duh." And my brother and I lost it. We lost it.
Yeah. So
it was, duh.
Just to a complete stranger in public.
Man. He didn't like hide things from us, you know, like my brother and I never did any drugs or alcohol hardly ever through high school, 20s, none of that. Like, and it was around us always. I mean, my dad was in the music business in the 60s and 70s. He did all of it.
Yeah.
I mean,
I
still hear stories to this day that I didn't know about when he was.
About your dad?
Oh, yeah. I heard a story recently that they were on tour one time and every member of the band got hospitalized because they, like, did too much of something.
Five for five.
You know what I mean?
We got them all.
Yeah. So.
Yeah. We bowled a strike.
But they never hid it or like, you know what I mean? So
you weren't sheltered. My dad was the same way. I remember the first time that I I swore in front of him. We were watching a baseball game. I grew up in south of Seattle, and we're watching a Mariners game. It was back when we were actually good, and mm-hmm. it was like late, you know, fall, and it was like an important game, and the other team gave up a hit. Yeah. You just go, oh,
your dad?
Yeah, I did that.
Uh-oh.
And my dad looked at me, and he goes, really? You wasted it on baseball? Like the first one in front of me.
That's great.
But he was that way. My dad had it. He was very like he was very dry, but he was also very silly, which I like being silly, but I'm not silly on stage. Mm. But I like being silly at home. Just a total different kind of.
Yeah, my dad was so silly.
I remember one time we were me and my sister were fighting in the van. We had this big old conversion van. Me and my sister Jessica, and we were just in the backseat, just going at it. And he would never engage with us when we fought. It was a weird thing. He would just my dad has two emotions, like silly and fury, like just complete anger.
Wow.
And it would snap, but you wouldn't know when. But usually it was silly. And it was like it was. I remember it was like it was near Christmas and we were fighting. And then there's a break and my dad starts singing out of nowhere. And he's doing the Toys R Us jingle. And he goes, I don't want to grow up. I'm a Toys R Us dad. No toys for Christmas because my kids are too bad.
Oh, wow.
And he said right there. And we just laughed. Like, we're ridiculously.
Ended the fight.
Ended the fight. And that's the awesome. Power of humor. Like, when it lands, when it works, it can totally just disarm a situation like that, especially when it's so silly and so harmless and there's no victim.
Yeah. I still, to this day, don't think I'm as good as a father as my dad was. Hmm. And I always feel like I've dropped the ball. Mm. Even though the kids are great, but like, yeah, I just
how
I,
so?
You know, I was a young dad.
Yeah, same.
I was way too young, and I still wanted to do my stuff. And I feel like even though I waited to get into comedy, I feel like especially for my youngest, I felt like it was a little too soon because he was still 11, and I was gone. Mm. I started being out every night, like, you know, and I feel like
were you still doing the day stuff?
Yeah.
So it was both.
Yeah.
I just got out of that. For the years of doing the day and the night. Now it's just the night, which is hard, but at least it's so much better that I'm around during the day.
I ran my business for the first 7 years I did stand-up. Still, I was doing, and it was a full-time stand-up.
That's all day, all night, yeah.
Teaching, running the school, yeah, so it was.
Yeah, you get home on Sunday, or you get home on Monday morning and go straight to work.
Yep, yep. But now, you know, it's cool now. They're grown-ups, and now they love coming to the Comedy Store. My youngest especially really likes coming and hanging out at the Comedy Store. And it's pretty cool. One time where, you know, he's 23 years old and just really a hip dude, you know what I mean? And I'm sitting at the Comedy Store, him and I are having a cigar together. Mm-hmm. And people are coming up and, hey, what's up, Jason? Who's this? Who's your buddy? And I'm like, this is my son. And I'm like, oh, you and your son are
That's
having a cigar
so cool
together.
For him, yeah.
Like, yeah, it's pretty cool.
Yeah, my kids can come on the road with me. They love, like, next week I'm bringing my son up to Seattle with me. And,
nice.
And you know, because I got family up there and the travel and the going to the shows, you know. Now my kids are young enough that their perspective of what me being successful is way off. They're like, so like you'll be like Kevin Hart soon, right? I was like, oh no. I might not ever meet Kevin Hart. You understand me? Like, there's a good chance we'll never be in the same room together. It's highly unlikely that I'll be Kevin Hart.
That's so funny.
But so we're just kind of like starting to lower the bar. Like, let me introduce you to these other funny comedians that are having good working careers. I might be that.
Yeah. See, my kids got spoiled, man. They met the big guys immediately.
Yeah.
Because of who I was hanging with. You mm-hmm. know, like Jonathan, my youngest, his favorite comic forever was Daniel Tosh.
Right.
Well, he got to watch Daniel Tosh bring me up at the Comedy Store.
Oh, that's so cool.
Which was pretty cool. You know,
that's amazing.
That's my dad and Daniel Tosh. Yeah. He's met Dane a bunch of times. I introduced him to Chappelle one night. So yeah, they've gotten to be
their worlds. Yeah.
So now my son's like, Dad, you got a show tonight? It's always this. Hey, Dad, you got a show tonight? I go, yeah. You want to go? He goes, hey, well, who else is on it?
Who's on the lineup? You're like, all right. You can follow the Comedy Store on Instagram. Yeah, all right.
Exactly.
You don't need me for this.
Yep.
Well, you know, I do. I do a lot of club shows, but I also periodically will be doing church shows. And one of the church guys that I work with is this guy named Tim Hawkins, and those are big shows.
Yeah.
You know, anywhere between 3,000 and 5,000 usually.
Wow.
Giant shows. And it has totally also ruined my kid's perspective of what me being a successful comedian is.
Right.
Because they're like, so you'll have a tour bus soon too, right? And I was like, no, that's not happening.
I'm just riding on this one.
Yeah, I got a lot of rental cars. A lot of rental cars. Well, so you're talking about your dad being funny, and it seems like overall that was hugely helpful for the home.
Yeah.
You know, was your mom funny?
They both had my mom has a great sense of humor. She's so funny still. Like, and you know what's awesome is when I want to do like an Instagram story with my mom and do something silly, she's immediately on board.
Yeah.
I don't even have to say, okay, when I do this, you say this. I don't even have to do that. I go, Mom, look at the camera, and then I'll do something, and she's on it.
She's just yes
and. She's yes and.
She was born.
Yeah, it's great. It's great.
Born to improv.
Yeah, it's awesome.
That's great. So when you think about like your.
And my mom, so supportive. So both of them, but my mom, you know, my dad's been, it's been 12 years, but my mom is still so supportive. It's such a cool thing to have like that support from your, never once were they like, just so you know, this isn't reality.
Oh, man.
One day you're going to have to get a real job. Never that.
Well, yeah, we have so many peers where they talk to us about that and you're just like, oh, my parents don't want me to do this or they started off in a different career, especially, you know,
I think with me it helped that they were they were artists, like, because my mom was a musician and played, and my dad, they were doing it. And,
I agree.
You know, and
I agree. It's the same reason that you're supportive to your kid.
My mom's
photography.
First,
you can't hold that against him when you tell jokes for a living.
To myself, I'm like, oh, he's never gonna make any money. But out loud, I'm like, great, son, I'm so supportive.
Yeah.
My mom told me straight out the second I told her that I was going into music, and she went, oh no, not again. You know.
Yeah.
But
this really is the story of Coco. This is the whole. You pretty much just described the plot.
Right.
Do you feel that transferred into your home? You as a dad, are you funny at home?
Yeah.
You,
I think I am. My kids.
Do your kids think you're funny?
It depends. Sometimes they're like, it's too much, Dad.
Yeah. Or like when you're like running bits, or like they're just tired.
Just being silly with them.
Yeah.
Making fun of them, trying to be funny.
How did that change when they were young? Like to
when they were young,
now?
We used to. When they were younger, like, you could just everything made them laugh.
My kids think I'm the funniest person alive.
How old are they?
They are 10, and in the 10-year-old's starting to phase out of me.
Yep, I was going to say.
Yeah, because he's almost 11. But I can still get him every once in a while.
You wait until he's a teenager and he's got his girl coming around.
Yeah.
Like, I remember one time.
I have 10, 8, and 4. Those
I remember one
kids.
Time Jonathan brought a girlfriend home, and I was being silly, and he looked at her, and he goes, it never stops.
Yeah, it's fun now. They're right. Like, Joel has a cousin who's the same age as him. And last time I saw him, we were up in Seattle, and I was making fun of him in front of his friends, you know, like,
great.
Your mom's going to change the sheets again. Like, I know Donovan probably has to talk about it. It's a real problem. Just bedwetting jokes.
That's
like, simple, easy. And he's kind of laughing and sheepish. But like, yeah, at 15, 16, it's like, I know it's coming. I was
that way. So right now, my boys are now, James, the oldest one, now he's getting back into my buddy.
Okay.
Jonathan's still kind of like, ugh, Dad, you know? But I think that might have, now that I think about it, that might have something to do with the fact that James has been out of the house. When he moved out, he was gone for 3 years.
Yeah.
And I rarely saw him because he was out of state.
Mm-hmm.
And few times it was cool because he would come see me on tour when I was near him.
Oh, that's cool, yeah.
Like Dalia and I did New Orleans one time, and he came to see me in New Orleans.
That's amazing, yeah.
He came and saw me in Texas, which was cool, but... Now, I think because he has the real world experience, so now he gets what I've been doing for all this, how hard it is.
He appreciates the grind. He sees what you built.
Jonathan doesn't get it yet, and he will, but he kind of acts like he doesn't think I'm funny at all right now.
Hmm.
But, you know, he also is like, you got a show tonight, Dad? I don't want to come.
Right.
You know, he almost came with me to this one tonight, but had to do some, he's preparing for his gallery thing, so.
That's great. Yeah, that's the. I definitely can sense it happening with the 10, 11-year-old.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
Because the 8 and the 4-year-old, especially they're girls, and they just, it's like everything I do is the funniest thing that they've ever seen. Everything I do. It's not even, I can be mad, and they just think it's funny. It's and it's amazing. It's like, this is the best crowd in the world.
That's what my son thinks is funny still. When I'm angry, that's what he thinks. Yeah. Funny. It's like an inside joke at the house. They all go, "That's not again." You know.
Do you use? I mean, I find, you know, the humor can be. There is a time where it's too much, but at other times it can be the great reliever of tension.
Yep.
Where, you know, Melissa, and I think she'll be okay with me telling this story. Melissa's my wife. you know, they always, whenever I hit the road, they just go nuts. They just drive her crazy. And they just, you know, well, Dad said I could do that. They just, it's just through the teeth lies, all the stuff, you know, Dad said, and then Dad, I'll come home like a wrecking ball. And they're like, Joel came up to me. He's like, Dad, Mom said the other day that she's going to end me. Like, what? And Gloria comes up. She's like, yeah, I heard it too.
That's
I heard
great.
It too. Mom just said, like, I'm going to end you. And she was like, that sounds like it was really upset. And now, probably once a week or so, we'll say that as a joke in the house. Like, and now it's a relief of tension. Like, you. Careful, Mom's going to end you. And it now it's a tense thing that was hard. And now it's humor can do that. It can just be this great sense of, you know, we can laugh at hard things and anger and how we were in the moment. You know what I mean?
Yep. My wife says this. This is when I know that I'm being really funny. When she says, you're not funny. That's not funny. And I'm like, okay, that means it was pretty funny.
That does your wife think you're funny?
Not all the time.
Yeah.
That woman has the patience of a saint to put up with me. But she thinks I'm funny. She thinks she didn't under. She's from the real world.
Yeah.
And where you go and get a job and work and make, you know.
And your experience has just been totally different.
Yeah,
she just music and
it was a long time when she just thought I was insane. She, at 35, and we've been together since we were teenagers. At 35, you're gonna just do what now? Why? She thought I was insane, and she couldn't understand why. Why are you at the comedy club when you're not on the show? Mm. Didn't understand that was a huge part of it, hanging out.
Yeah,
it wasn't until I did the Tonight Show when she realized, oh, this is
7 years.
This is okay. I get it because I had. All the family come over the house.
It's such a validating
and
thing.
We sat and we watched, and there I am, shaking hands with Justin Timberlake on the TV.
JT was on that episode.
Oh, that episode was Paula Patton and Justin Timberlake with the other guests and me,
and some dude named Jason,
and some dude, and I closed the show.
Yeah, because the comic goes last.
Yeah,
I'm the headliner.
Then it kind of made sense. Then, oh, this is real, because that year I did. That year, the year I did The Tonight Show, I also did Comic View on BET. I also got invited to Just for Laughs. And
it was a big year.
Got my name on the wall at the Comedy Store all that same.
That was 1 year.
That was all in the same year, yeah.
You hadn't had that good a year since your first year.
Yeah.
Your first night.
That was it. And then from there, again, plateau.
And now you're doing the stats.
Now I'm doing
the
stats.
Now you're back, baby.
For the fourth time. It's a residency. I know.
Yeah, it's a great. I mean, you're in SoCal. Like, finding a long set is not easy.
Yeah.
So that's why people come down here all the time. Like, oh, yeah, what? I can do 35 plus, you know.
When Richard at Comedy and Magic calls me and says, we got a 20-minute spot open, I'm like, wow, let's do it.
20 whole minutes.
20 minutes that it takes me 15 minutes to get to.
Oh, yeah, you're really close to there.
Yeah.
It takes me 3 hours to get there.
Where do you live?
San Diego.
Oh, wow, you're still doing that.
I'm
jump. Wow.
I don't know. Yeah, it's it's funny. I feel there's times where you go, this is amazing down here. I have so much stage time. I have a show that I run down here. I can work. When I work the road, I'm really happy to come home here.
Right. It's great down here.
Oh man, when you land in LAX, it's just like, I don't want to be here. Oh, you know, it's awful.
LAX. I try my best to fly in and out of Long Beach.
Right.
Yeah.
So there's times, and then there are other times where I will have full, you know, anxiety-ridden nights of I have to be in L.A. or New York. I have to be I don't want to be a San Diego. I don't want to be a big fish in a little pond. I don't, you know, I got to go. Oh. Even though I can objectively look at my career and go, it's going pretty well.
Yeah, you're doing
even
great.
L.A.-wise, like there's some clubs that I'm passed out up there and I work up there and it's great. But at the same time, you'll just go, I'm not getting this and you see your peers getting stuff, which is the hardest part. There are many hard parts about comedy. One of the hardest parts is the comparison of.
That's the biggest thing for all of us, I think. We all spend way too much time focusing what everybody else is getting. Mm. I have to stop myself sometimes and go, okay, stop.
Mm-hmm.
Stop doing this. What's that documentary series that was on HBO with Dr. Dre and Jimmy Iovine?
Oh, I didn't see it.
What was it called? Something like that. But there's this thing that Iovine, I can't remember how to say this, said in the thing. He said the reason that racehorses have blinders to keep them from looking at to keep them from looking at what the other horses are doing.
To focus on what they're doing.
Because if they look at the other horse, they crash. They crash and die. You know? That's why those. And I start thinking, I got to keep those blinders on and just focus what I'm doing.
That's a little too on the nose. It's a little.
Yeah. Just be happy with what I'm doing.
Yeah.
And I remind myself of that all the time because I think we all get stuck in it. Everybody at every level does. Mm-hmm. I have some of my best friends that are extremely successful, and they still are like, why aren't I getting a feature film? No. You know?
Oh, man. So and I don't, and I think that, I don't think that it is unique to comedy. I think that is a human trait. Mm-hmm. But I think that it is exasperated in comedy because it is merit-based. Because we have, you know, comedy is like this weird old type thing where we have these like trophies. Like, oh, I got passed at this club and I got this credit and I did this and now I'm headlining. We have these, you know, comedy has very clear merits.
Yeah.
And you either have them or you don't. And sometimes your peers have them and you don't. And... you know, and you'll hear everybody from the top just as unhappy as they were when they were at your level or beneath that, but you still don't believe the lie.
One of the things about comedy that I wonder if it's the same in music and other things is the thing is with us is you and I can be on the same show, same lineup as a guy who goes out on the weekends and performs at arenas. Mm. But we're going to also do the same. Like, that's how many true, times have you been? I mean, I can't even tell you how many times I've been on the lineup with Sebastian Maniscalco and Bill Burr and Chris Rock and I'm next. But then I'm going to Victorville this weekend, and they're going
to Middle.
To Middle, and they're performing at the Staples Center. You know,
yeah, it's a different life. Yeah. I think that because comedy has such a you know, a bootstraps mentality that, you know, you don't run into the ego. You do. Of course, there's egos. Yeah. But you run into some of the people who are at the top and they're just still some of the kindest, most humble people because you don't forget those years in Victorville.
Yeah.
You don't forget the Victorville years, you know.
I was just there. I have a Victorville story if you want to hear it.
Let's hear it. Yeah, absolutely.
Oh, my goodness.
Who doesn't want to hear a Victorville
story? Top 10 most dangerous cities in California. Okay. Number nine,
sneaked in.
Murder rate way up, just scary. And there's a new club there, and I went and did it for a weekend. And the club's in the hotel that you stay in, and there was a fight outside my hotel room door, motel. Sorry.
As I say, this is an outside facing door.
Outside facing door, walking.
Always
out.
Good.
Yep. And they're banging against my door and fighting, and I'm hearing them. It was crazy. And I'm like, I can't go to it was, and I was resting and relaxing before the show. I go, I can't leave to go to the show. Finally, it ends. They go into a room above me. I go to the show, and I come and I get back to my room and I get in there and lock the door and go to sleep. The next morning I get woken up again to commotion, but now the voices are saying, "Hurry up, come this way. He's not breathing."
Oh,
they pulled the guy out of the room above me, a dead guy out of the room above me. And I said, "Thank you, Victorville. Good night."
I'm going home to Long Beach.
The people that live there call it Victimville.
Oh, my gosh.
Why? I wonder why. But the club was fun. The shows were fun.
Yeah, I was in Fresno this last weekend also.
You mean Fres Yes?
Fres Yes.
Yeah.
Also a little hoodie.
There's some dicey areas in Fres Yes.
It was funny because we were, you know, I was out with Hawkins and it was like, those are kind of like posh gigs for me. I don't do a lot of time. I do 20 minutes. I'm mostly out there as a t-shirt salesman. And I was telling them because they didn't know about Fresno because they all live in the Midwest and stuff. And I was like, yeah, Fresno's not great. You know, you don't have to talk to people on the sidewalks because they're talking to themselves. You know, it's a pretty bad area.
Yeah.
I told them that they were the neck tattoo of California.
The neck tattoo.
And they liked that. It was good. And then that night, we wake up the next morning and the Christian tour bus had been tagged. Which I was like, goodness. This is the most Fresno experience you guys could have had.
Let's go.
They have to claim that territory. That's I got the funny. Tour bus. This is ours. This is our territory. People forget that, you know, we've got some shady areas.
Let's not let these comedians forget where they are.
So your wife, I see your wife thinks she's funny. I've wrestled through this in my house. If my wife thinks something is funny, it will not work on stage.
Nope. I'm in the same. Here's my wife's sense of humor. It's adorable, but it's just... you know Highlights magazine for kids?
Yes.
You know the really corny jokes in the
she
back?
She loves them.
Those crack her. Like,
she
those
wants a bazooka
make her
joke.
Laugh so hard. What do you call a cow with no legs? Ground beef. That makes her.
She'll kill. It'll
die.
Kill.
Yeah. And she'll tell the joke and go.
She's like giggling over the punchline.
I'm laughing, but I'm just laughing because she thinks it's funny.
Yeah. And meanwhile, she's married to a professional comedian.
Right. Right.
Who's been slaving away on bits for the last how many ever years.
Jeez.
My wife has a more twisted sense of humor. And it's just, if it's, she likes like just kind of like weird, dark stuff. Not like awful stuff, but just kind of weird. I wish I could think of an example that it's just like, man, yeah, there's no way that's going to work on stage. She's almost like a comedian.
Does she tell you, try this on stage?
No, she'll say, that's really funny. I bet it won't work on stage. And at this point, we have just years of test samples saying, like, no, if you... Or like all, if I'm really confident about a bit, like there's a bit that I've been trying to do right now about the middle kid. Like it's really important that you hang out with your middle kid, but it's also important to why you're doing it. Not tell her we're only doing this because you're the middle kid, which is a joke that every comedian I've ever said to is like, that's pretty funny. That's really good. And my wife laughs at, and then on stage, they're like, whew, like it just doesn't work. Yeah, and
it
but
will
that's
one day.
It maybe. Yeah, yeah. I'll keep working on it. Like, how many times will I let this joke bomb before?
One, that's the difference. My wife stays out of it. She doesn't ever say try. She stays out of what I do.
Yeah.
The corny joking around is just at home joking around kind of stuff.
Yeah, but does she make you laugh?
Yeah.
Because the giggling. Yeah.
Just certain, she does. She just. I think it's just there's certain things, and I just go, that's hilarious.
Yeah. Well, it makes you laugh in a different way than stand up because I feel like I still enjoy stand up, but not in the way that I did before I was a comic.
Right.
And I'm just like, oh yeah, that's funny. That's really. Mm-hmm. It takes a lot.
Oh,
That Mulaney monologue on SNL, that was like hard laugh. But I don't laugh like that. Did you watch
great.
That?
That was great.
Oh, my gosh.
That was awesome.
And what were those bits about? I mean, they were just the most random, silly, let's make this 10 minutes to opening. But
he's so good.
Yeah, but I find the stuff that I laugh at home is like very different than the stuff that I'll laugh at, you know.
It takes a lot to make me laugh at stand-up as well. There's a few guys. Sebastian makes me laugh.
Yeah.
My friends still make me laugh. You know,
do you think when you were raising your kids that the humor, you being funny, helped?
Yes.
How so?
Well, I think it helped keep it light. Like in you know, I think it's so important to have laugh. I think one of the most important things to do is sit together as a family at the dinner table. Mm. Even if you can't do it every night, at least once or twice.
Sure, yeah.
A week. And we have our laughs there.
Yeah.
And I think that, you know, because being a family is hard.
Oh,
and,
yeah.
And trying to stay in a house that you can barely afford, and it could be hard and dramatic. And so you got to have that comic relief.
I agree.
To ease the tension. Like your dad in the car. The Toys R Us song.
Toys R Us dad.
Just, all right, there it is. That eased the tension. That. There it goes.
I think humor has this wonderful like way of just adding perspective of lighting, you know, Tom Papa has a great bit about that, like about raising his kids. He's like, what are we going to be here? 16, 17, 18 years?
Yeah.
Why all the tension?
Man,
Let's just have a good time. We'll head our separate ways as friends.
It goes by so fast, dude. It goes by so fast. There's days when I'm at that point now where I see like people with their young, and I miss that. I miss that so much.
Yeah, I can hear it in your voice when I talk about my kids.
Oh, I miss it.
It sounds
much.
Like you miss your kids thinking you were funny.
Yeah, I miss them thinking I was. I miss them thinking I was cool.
Well, I think you're cool, Jason.
Thanks, man.
Thanks for doing the podcast, buddy.
Thanks for having me. I love it.
All right, man. Let's go have a good show.
Let's do it.
Thanks for tuning in, everybody. If you have not done so already, please rate and subscribe. Follow us on all the social medias and share with all of your friends. Also, if you want to shoot us a note, you can email us at don'tmakemecomebackthere@gmail.com. Also, if you enjoyed this episode and you have not done so already, please go back and listen to all the episodes we've done before. Thanks so much, everybody.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments. River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th. So get your tickets now at kosai.org.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/kidsandfamily. Just go to Indeed.com/kidsandfamily right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.